Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to our first off-season edition of Deliberate Practice on USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. And joining me on today's podcast is my guest host, Andy Ryland. Andy, good to have you back.
Keith, pleasure to be on again. Moving into the off-season here, obviously. So change of pace, some downtime, and guys start thinking about what winter program's going to look like. So we got some great ideas for that coming today.
And then our special guest on this episode is our contact expert, former NFL offensive lineman, world champion in jiu-jitsu, and a number of other things that he's been involved in, Scott Peters. Scott, it's always great to talk with you on the podcast.
Thanks, Keith. Hey, what's up, Andy? Good to be with you guys.
So, Scott, you and I have had this conversation before, and as we look at the offseason, for the most part, over the course of the history of this game, we've missed out on huge opportunities to develop skill in essentially what we call the non-skill guys, which I really believe we need to get away from using that term. And the whole premise is that in the offseason, we're going to get the big guys, the non-skill guys, in the weight room and get them bigger, faster, and stronger, and that's going to make them better on the field. And that's kind of the premise that's been set up. That's the paradigm we've been stuck in, and I think you've uncovered that we're missing huge opportunities here.
We are. You know, you're right about that. I mean, the fact is I think they call – it's a simple term. You got big guys and skill guys, right? Well, the skill guys are the guys that touch the ball. The big guys are the ones who are out there just hitting each other. So in a world where technique knowledge is not abundant or it's not accessible, sure, I guess just let's get the biggest freaks we can. Let's line them up, and that we don't, since we don't understand technique, let's just call them the big guys and send them over there to the weight room. But the world's changed. We've done some things. We've recognized that contact is an actual skill set. It's not just something that is an attribute of just like size and strength. Just because you're big and strong, that doesn't equate to necessarily being good. So what we've done with our program with Tip of the Spear, we've put together a step-by-step progression that we, you know, basically everybody can learn from, and a skill development program, just to kind of discuss what we're talking about for your podcast, because that's the name of the game. If we can get players from A to Z, okay, so A being like, I don't know anything, and Z being you're a master of contact skills by position, then the question is then like, well, how do we expedite that? How do I make that A to Z the most direct line possible? Because, you know, when I played in the NFL, I got to tell you, my line to whatever the top was for me was not a straight line. It was a lot of zigzag dips and a lot of frustration. So what we've done is we've tried to systemize this for people. So this works at every level. We want to try to give coaches tools so they aren't doing things that are arbitrary, that aren't leading toward a more effective player, skill mastery, but they're only leading toward like things that you want as a coach on the field. So it starts with the coach understanding and defining what that is with his players. That's a really important one, because I know we've all, most of the listeners probably played at one point or another. And if you haven't, there's something I can say as a player, a former player, that was frustrating. There's nothing worse than when a coach isn't clear about what he wants, when you didn't do something well. So, you know, hey, that sucked. Well, obviously, you know, I think everybody can identify when a performance is lacking, you know, even the person in the nosebleed seats. But the player needs to know, well, what do I need to do to fix that? And the coach is, that's his obligation to explain that. So once we understand our goals, then how do we expedite the skill development surrounding that? And that's what we've been able to do with our system.
And when I look at this aspect of it, Scott, and I ran a just kind of an informal Twitter poll question a couple weeks ago about individual practice time and how much practice time do you get for your players over the course of, you know, the 10-week season. And, you know, you hear a lot of these guys talk about the range for essentially the linemen, right, was about 45 minutes to an hour a week of actual skill development, technique development type work. So, you know, that's not a lot over the course of a season. You talk about 10 hours, right? A total of 10 hours. And then they're going to essentially go without skill development because they're the big guys. They're going to go to the weight room. They're going to go out without that again now till sometime in the summer, maybe when they get their contact days, the players. If you have spring ball, you might get them then. But we're not going to build on that skill, really, until we hit that again. And we're missing huge opportunities. We get our quote-unquote skill guys are out there throwing the ball around, running routes, defending routes, doing all those kinds of things. We might have our big guys out there competing and doing tire flips or dragging things or pushing things, and it all looks pretty cool when you go out to these big man camps and they're doing that kind of stuff, but we haven't put our finger on the idea that there's a ton of skill in what those guys do. And in a lot of aspects, it's not just natural athletic ability that takes over it, that there's a lot of posture you have to work on. There's a lot of hand placement, of foot placement, of all those things you have to work on that becomes very detailed, much like hitting a curveball in baseball, right? You're just not going to throw a kid into the batter's box and say, okay, go. But yet we're doing that on the football side of things with the way we're teaching the aspects, which include some form of contact, pre-tackle or contact.
Right. Well, there's a Bruce Lee quote that I like. He says, I fear not the man who has practiced 10,000 kicks once, but I fear the man who has practiced one kick 10,000 times. So that kind of summarizes what we're trying to accomplish. I mean, if you're working on skill development, the problem in football a lot of times is we get so crazy with our scheme, or you have other distractions. So to get that player to a level of proficiency, especially guys that are working inside the tackle box, and I want to spend a second talking about them, because we talk about tackling, and I know you guys are launching a great new product, a program with Andy and Richie Gray. It's world class for tackling. But then there's all these guys that are on the field that don't tackle anybody. Like, I was one of those guys. I made like 2 tackles in my life on interceptions, but I hit my head all the time because I operated in the tackle box. That's the majority of players on the field. Every play doesn't necessarily end in a tackle. And if it does, it's probably involving maybe 1 to 3 players total, only one ball carrier and maybe 1 to 2 defenders. So in other words, like, there's all this head contact that's going on in the field. We know that's not good. So how do we address that when the rules don't penalize it? And that's where performance comes in. So we have, with the tip of the spear content, with our system, our contact system, we talk about two things. There's two things that we need criteria-wise to make these techniques, to integrate these techniques. The first thing is, number one, is the techniques must never involve the helmet as a tool for contact. We're using our hands and our shoulders to engage. And the second thing is, and this is the most important thing outside of the safety element, it has to be here. Techniques must win at the highest levels of football. So this is simple, but it's not easy to do. But all the techniques that we're teaching both do not use the helmet for contact, and they win at the highest levels, the NFL, because if they win at that level, and guess what? They can fill in at the levels below. It's true. We've been able to do that across all levels of football. And our slogan is safety through superior technique. And again, going back to that Bruce Lee coach, if you're a coach out there and you're wondering, well, what can I do with my guys? Well, this is a starting point. Listening to this podcast is just getting the conversation going. But instead of fearing your opponent who has mastered the skills to dominate on the one-on-one matchups, how about you elevate your players to the level of skill mastery? And that's through repetition. And that's what we're able to do with the tip of the spear system. We have the Shape, Sharpen, and Polish. It's our drill, our skill development product or program, if you will. We allow coaches, we give you guys options, because here's the deal. We know, you said, Keith, 45 minutes a week if you're lucky. Okay, so let's really optimize that time. That's still enough time to get some stuff done, and we have to look at how do we optimize that. So just movement patterns. That's what the name of the game is. We have to develop the proper movement patterns, because once you establish improper movement patterns, that becomes habitual and very hard to change. So we have all these drills in our skill development library at footballdevelopment.com, and we allow coaches, you can go on there and you can watch 3 videos for free. Just check them out and see what we're talking about. It really will help you. And there's not a player out there, NFL down to youth, that can't benefit from this. And I don't care if they're all pro, because we work with all pro guys and they use the same drills that the kids are using. So it's a truly integrated product that I think, coaches will really enjoy, and they have so far.
Andy, I'll let you jump in there, because I know for you, movement patterns and movement is a very important thing in all aspects of how you look at the game. And you view it, you've become known as a tackling expert, but you really, I don't think we should pigeonhole you in that. You really look at technique and movement across the board and the way the game works.
Well, I appreciate the kind words, but one of the terms you guys used was postures. And tackling, obviously, that's so important as well. Is, you know, I often say shape. You know, what's your shape going into contact? What do their shapes look like at, you know, the point here, point there within the play? And a lot of those shapes we can train year-round. And I think Scott's spot on there when he's talking about that training. We can train those postures. And you know, obviously, being here, I know the drills, having worked with Scott, I've got to do them on the field with him. And you see him and you go, okay, I feel the stress. I feel myself having to brace. I feel myself having to do all these proper things. Well, we can train those postures all the time for any of our contact skills. I think we maybe get lost in the fact that if it's not football, we're not training aspects that are going to carry over. And when you look at the football season, depending on whether you go 12 or 15 weeks to a championship plus preseason, even if you have spring ball, there's actually more weeks off season than there is in season. And so if we're going to have more weeks off season and we're not really training skill, and not just training skill, training to the best of our abilities, we're wasting half of the year, more than half of the year. And to me, that's a huge issue. And so Scott uses a brilliant analogy, and I've heard him talk about MMA fighters and boxers specifically, but you know, you have different kinds of pads and they're working different work on their technique, not just sparring. And I think for coaches, it's great to hear, and I'll let you go into it, but you don't have to be playing full football to be training the technique that you're going to use.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Andy. Good point, because we get caught up, and I think a lot of administrators do as well, when they think, you know, there's rules out there. We have rules against contact practices. And I'll be honest, I mean, in some ways it's good. In other ways, I don't agree with it. But at the same, but here's the reality. We don't want people going out there lining up and smashing each other. And given the rules, we have to operate within those rules. I think, you know, it'd be good if kids and players could work with their gear in the off season in non-contact capacities, but the rules restrict that largely. So here's the good news. We can still train and we can still do competitive type style contact techniques and drills that don't involve high impact or any impact at all, that train these movement patterns that we want, that are going to yield better results, more physical play. And so, you know, it's funny, like everybody in football, and this is the way it was when I was growing up, I wanted to be the best. So I, you know, what did I do in the off season? I just tried to get my bench press as high as I could possibly get it. I wanted to get as strong as I could. It's funny how little, at some point, that, you know, that those strength gains become a little bit actually detrimental to you in terms of your movement. They can, but really, if you want to take a player who, an average player, and make him great, then the fastest way to do that is not through development in the weight room. It's through development of skills. And so teaching contact skills, we've all been around players or seen players or at least heard of players that coaches will say, well, I don't get it. This kid can't lift his own body weight. He's not very strong, but man, is he physical? Is he powerful? And it's like this mysterious thing. But let's take the mystery away. Let's give people the tools. We've defined it very clearly for them. And here are the movement patterns you want. So how can we take every kid, give them that information, and let it be a race to the top? Because, you know, there's some of us out there that really want to be great. And hey, the tools are there. You know, when I was playing, I'm sure when you guys were playing too, it was like a mystery. You're like, well, how do I get better? Well, I don't know. You know, drink your own urine. I mean, there's crazy stuff going on out there, right? Theories. Well, I want to get better at football, so I need to develop these movement patterns. Let's define them for people and let them run with it. And that's the fun part about this. There's no excuse not to learn, not to develop yourself if the information exists.
No, and it's a great point. And I know both of the technique systems we're teaching now, you know, accuracy is a huge part of what we do. And then timing coupled with the accuracy, whether it's engaging with your hands or engaging with your shoulders, we have to be accurate. And that is a aspect of skill that isn't necessarily developed through lifting weights. It's developed through repetitions. It's developed through chaos and competitive drills. And talk about a little bit about your thoughts on how you can still really develop that fit and that accuracy, not having to play football, but by stacking your off-season program with an appropriate progression that's teaching those things.
Well, again, it goes back to the movement patterns. You want to do things that you can that emulate, simulate, and help advance your skills when it comes time to play football. So when we see, you know, coaches get out there, every coach in America, and I think I've never heard anybody disagree with this, that everybody will agree there's not enough time. And that's again, NFL down to like peewee football. we don't have enough time. So, okay, great. Let's try to optimize our time. But then when you see the kids get out there and the pads come on, they go from non-padded practices to padded practices. And even if they're working these movements that coaches say they want, oh, we're going to do our footwork and things. Well, as soon as that the player gets into that fight or flight setting, which is what happens when pads come on, we get a little tense. So what do they do? Well, we fall back on our movement, on our default movement pattern. So if you can get guys to do things that simulate the movement patterns, and we're actually critical about them. And see, I think in football, another issue that we've seen that's problematic for skill development is like coaches trying to just cram as many, you know, activities into a short span of time as possible to feel like we've done more. But really, it's really important to stop, take a moment, break down everything in a part whole capacity. So we're always evaluating our movements. And then that's such an important thing because again, like once you're establishing movement patterns, you don't want to derail or deviate. I read a book spacing me right now, but it's The Talent Code. And it talks about myelin in the brain. I don't know if you guys have ever talked about that, but when you talk, it's the way your brain learns, the way we learn. So over time, and the best analogy I've ever heard was, it's like this, it's like going down, imagine you're on a sled and you're going down a slope, like a ski slope, and with snow, right? So you go down that sled, and if the sled starts to deviate and turn, and you're out of control, you're making looping patterns down the hill, well, then you just carved the pattern right there. So then you take the sled back up to the top. Guess what? That same pattern, you're creating a groove. And so the problem with that is as you continue to go down the sled with that improper pattern, or at least that non-optimal pattern, it just makes it harder to stop after time because you've created this groove down there. Like you've really created like a canal. Whereas like instead what they recommend doing, and all these professional guys for development and guys that study the brain, they talk about stopping. Okay, I'm going down the sled, down the hill. Oh, I started to deviate course. Stop. Okay, redirect the sled. Okay, stop. It's going to be painful, right? You're not just flying down the hill. You're going to stop yourself, redirect, and you want to create that first movement pattern down the hill in a straight line. And you bring it back to the top, and it's a little easier to go straight again. And then pretty soon, you're just going from A to B in a straight line, and that's what we're trying to get done here because we have two issues at hand. Number one, football is a performance game, and that's what we want to do if we want to win. But, you know, with the safety element, we all want to make this game as safe as we can without compromising performance, and that's what this is going to take, just this kind of developmental aspect. So that's what we try to do with Tip of the Spear is we try to give you guys an option. Here we go. Here's a bunch of drills. Here's things that develop part whole for techniques for contact that are going to allow your players to optimize their power to dominate opponents on the field.
I know when we look at this aspect of it, Scott, we do have all those resources available. And I think for a lot of guys out there, I think what we're talking about might be a little abstract because we're not talking about doing anything that, you know, within your state, within even, you know, if you're collegiate within the NCAA rules is going to violate anything in terms of quote unquote football training and the way that you put these drills into your workout, that these go back to what we said before. They're fundamental movements, they're postures, they're teaching the player the exact way to stand, the footwork to take, those kinds of things without getting into how they apply to scheme, that these things are fundamental no matter what scheme you're using. And that's the beauty of what we put together in the system is that it is kind of agnostic of scheme, that there is a point within that, how that line is drawn, where if you get into these body positions, the rest of it goes from there. So yeah, the scheme's going to get you to a certain point, but then this stuff takes over. And that's why it's so important to look at how we can train this in the off season.
You're right. And there's some universal truths here when it comes to contact. So what we've done with the Tip of the Spear system is we've put together again, like finding all the common denominators. You'll see coaches that maybe an offensive line coach or a wide receivers coach will get together and think they don't have anything in common. You know, the receivers coach, you know, doesn't see that there's a correlation there between a stock block and a second level ball. It's the same thing, you know, or defensively, a cornerback or in a linebacker engaging a lineman on a second level block is the same as a corner taking on a receiver on a stock block. So there's a lot of correlation there. There's things that are similar that we can put like lump together. But the interesting thing about it is the body works the same way, and movement and contact and all those things for generating force and leverage on the field, they all work the same way regardless of the position. So you can kind of apply this to broadly across the entire team. And the best way to do it, again, not to confuse anybody, just go check out our videos. Go watch. You can watch them for free. Just go to footballdevelopment.com and just see. And then, you know, you can start to integrate those into your system. But again, it's about trying to optimize that. And whether you do it through us or someone else, like, just think about it differently. How do I, you know, take advantage of my time? Let's stop thinking about what we used to do, because I know that's a major problem. I mean, everybody, you know, if you ask them to break down, it's kind of mindless. We just go, well, I used to do it that way and it worked. We won a state championship. Okay. But what about the next guy who has aspirations to win that state championship? Everybody else has plans to move ahead too. How are they doing it? And the revolution, or evolution, if you will, is happening in the technique realm, not so much in the scheme realm. And so to your point, Keith, or regardless of the scheme, rather, there's some certain truths about technique that we can develop across the board. It doesn't matter what types of plays you're running, what system you're running scheme-wise, but each and every player on the field will get stronger and more effective on a one-on-one situation by learning and developing these things.
Yeah, and one of the things, too, that I really like is going back to Keith's point about the different rules. I believe a lot of the rules talk about, you know, you can't use football equipment, and a lot of times that includes, like, you know, balls or pads or football specific training things. But a lot of the things that you advise working on, you can do in shorts and t-shirt. And in our first advanced tackle system 5 fight video, you know, we put out our shoulder battle, which is a shorts and t-shirt drill where the guys are just working on feeling their shoulder and establishing, you know, dominant body posture. So those are things that don't fall within the rules of, hey, we're not using football equipment. We have two guys working against each other. You can still have your competitive, high enthusiasm environment that you may want for your off-season training, but you're doing it while developing things that we believe are going to carry over onto the football field more than the competition of running around a cone just for the sake of being tired. So maybe talk a little bit about some of those competitive drills and how those can be used maybe as like in a mat drill workout or something to develop more specific techniques within those competitions.
Yeah, sure. So we break our drills down, shape, sharpen, and polish the spear. The spear being our hands, our shoulders, the point of contact, the first point of contact that engages an opponent. So we break these drills on the system so you can kind of follow the categories. Shape drills are movement pattern drills. They're not football specific drills. They're things that you do with your, like, for instance, hips, right? Everybody in America will also say, not enough time and our kids aren't using their hips. Okay, great. So let's use a shape drill. We have a ton of them for hip activation. So uncoiling the hips. There are things that you can integrate into a warm-up period, into a weight room activity, wherever. We have, so just find a tag, shape drills, put those in place. They're not competitive drills. Then you go to sharpen drills. Those are football-specific hand-fighting drills, but they don't involve impact. So I might have a partner. I want to work on leverage recovery. I want to work on what happens when my opponent gets his hands in a better position than I have my hands. Or I establish leverage, and then he recovered leverage. Now I have to regain it throughout the play. Okay, well, we have a refit drill that we do with everybody, and that's a sharpened drill. And we have a lot of striking drills that include those that don't involve football pads and they don't involve competition. But they're exactly what we say. We're sharpening the spear. We want to make sure we're developing the skills. And then finally, the polish drills is what you're asking about. How do we compete in the off season to make these guys like better? How do we, because competition is the measuring stick. And the reality is you can't grow what you can't measure. So if you're a kid and you're out there, you're not sure if you're getting any better. Your only form of measurement in an off season is like your strength and conditioning numbers usually. But if we get the kids competing in a non-contact capacity, we have a really good drill called King of the Ring, which is where guys will line up, they'll tie up together, and it's non-impact based, so you don't need shoulder pads, but they're going to find themselves in a leverage drill. It's a contest to see who can control the other guy with the hands from a fit. So again, not big impacts or anything like that, but it really tells the story as to where they are. So it's good feedback. If you're not winning those drills, then you got to go back and correct something within your technique. So polishing everything is such an important thing, to polish the spear. We want to make sure we're actually giving our players a chance to see where they stand. And that's what these drills will do. So shape, sharpen, and polish as a progression helps expedite everything. Again, you can see these drills for yourself. It's a little harder to explain, but you can see them and see how you might benefit from them. But yeah, that's the idea, is to just to utilize time in a way that's optimal. And again, without shoulder pads on, it can be done. It can be done. And that's what we do with our NFL guys, too. You know, those guys can't use pads in the offseason either, but they certainly want to get better.
Scott, I know kind of as a starting point, we do have quite a few guys out there who are users of the system now and who have incorporated this back when we released it around June. So they're using it. They're looking to get into their offseason right now. And I know for you, a big, I guess, starting point or something you would integrate right away into your strength and conditioning program would probably be the HIIT series and some of the drills that you would focus on there. And again, I know some of this won't translate to our listeners right now, but you can go back and, again, look at some of these videos for free on footballdevelopment.com. And depending on when you hear this podcast, our introductory pricing is still in place. And very this is very affordable. Right now it's $69.99, and you're going to get a ton out of this. And we have more coming in to the system in February, and we're really excited about that as well. But Scott, if you could just kind of go through and describe how you would integrate the HIIT series into a typical weight room workout.
Sure. So this might sound like Chinese to some of you guys, but there's some drills in there we call them shape drills, right? So we can integrate a shape drill, a sharpened drill. These are football movement pattern drills for contact. So let's say we're in a weight room capacity and you're doing a bench press, for instance, right? So when you do bench press, a lot of times, and you'll hear, we don't want to go on a tangent, but a lot of times the act of pressing will drive the elbows out of the frame of the body, right? So the thumbs are in, the elbows are out. That's flat bench press. That's Olympic bar bench press. So that particular movement pattern is not optimal, we don't believe, and it's not most powerful for the hand. So we're not saying don't do that. We're not saying, hey, don't bench press anymore. We're saying, you know, because you got to build armor, you got to build some mass and strength around your joints. So we're not going to say don't do it. We're going to say if you're going to do bench press, then let's superset that. Let's work right away, right after that set is over, get with a partner and do a hand fighting drill that does work the movement patterns we want. So for example, I already mentioned the refit drill. It's a great drill. You integrate that into the weight room after the bench press rep. So now you're kind of offsetting those improper movement patterns. You're still getting the benefit of strength and power that you're building from the lift, but you're not losing the movement patterns you want because you're constantly practicing that and integrating those drills in the weight room. We recommend that for all the different things. So even if you're doing like say heavy squats, you'll see guys kind of cheat those squats where they don't go fully, they don't come up to full extension, their hips remain behind them. We want players to activate their hips. That's their major source of power. So in between sets of squats, we can do uncoil drills. And again, and if you look at the way our drills are broken down on footballdevelopment.com with the tip of the spear contact system, you go through and they're all labeled coil, uncoil, fit, finish. So coil drills are pre-contact. So it's like your stance, a posture you want to be in before the act of uncoiling your hips. Then you have uncoil drills, which is hip activation. And you have fit drills, which is the act of striking somebody. And then finish is everything that happens after contact, where at the highest levels, that's what wins. So the drills are broken down in that manner. So yeah, it's easy to just plug these things in and start looking at your warmups. Why are we doing, you know, I'm not going to put anybody down, but I'm saying if you're doing lunges, when was the last time, you know, you're doing lunges on the field? You don't do jumping jacks on the field. You don't do some of these things that we've always been doing as players. So let's take some of these drills and plug those in. You get the benefit of warming up and you get the benefit of establishing that skill mastery. Cause as you chip away, you're getting toward that 10,000 ticks. Like Bruce Lee said, let's just keep getting these guys doing the right things over and over again. And it only supports success and safety.
Going back to the specifics of the refit drill, I get off the bench press in between sets. I'm going to get with, you know, one of the partners in my group. What would be your recommendation on the length that they're going to go on that refit drill? Is it something in your mind that some weeks is going to be shorter than others? You might expand the time they're there. What would you look at like in terms of like an optimal time to be in that refit drill to, again, get those patterns that we want there?
That's a really good question. So what I would recommend with that, especially for guys that are new to this drill, which is pretty much everybody, it's a new drill for them. If they saw it, you're going to get guys that are trying to muscle each other with that. So the way we kind of combat that is we don't want them to muscle this. And when you're really good at refitting the hands, it's fluid. And when you're striking, you're not having to be tense, you know, and the analogy I use is maybe swinging a golf club. You're not going to get that distance out of the ball if you're really tense with your and rigid with your swing. You want to have fluid mechanics. So what we recommend for new guys or really anybody, we like to go longer time under tension. So the sets should be, you know, we usually do them in time, but, you know, 30 seconds is a good time. You can even go up from there, but it should just be fluid, loose. And when you're starting, though, before we get into those long repetition, those long sets, just let's, again, go back and stop the players, making sure the mechanics are there first. And once the mechanics are there, now we can ramp up the speed. The analogy is when you're listening to music at a low volume, just like you would in a lower, slower repetition, that the lyrics should not change when you dial up the volume, right? So when you get out there, you should see the same things happen, only faster. We just want to not compromise on our movement patterning. So yeah, I would put them through 30 seconds, but again, stop them, go slow to start, and then ramp up speed accordingly, according to your skill. And don't do it before, because you'll see a lot of guys try to go fast before they really get the movements, and it's kind of a waste of time. And in fact, it's detrimental to their development.
Yeah, two things that I absolutely love. And one, you know, you talk about stopping them and make sure that it's right. And it brings me to a point, I believe Richie said on our second podcast, but about forensic detail. And we want to be that dialed in with our detail. And sometimes, especially in the off season, under the guise of hard work or grinding or those sort of things, we let the guys get away with some technique slippage because we're trying to induce pure fatigue. And if we want to get better at the skill, we need to be sharp with it. We need to have that forensic detail. And then I just wanted to share a quick story. I have a good coaching friend, a high school coach, who had heard you speak this off season, and he started implementing these supersets, not just with his line players, but with all of his guys. So his secondary and his wide receivers, during their rest periods, they would catch a ball, having a partner, and they just get 20 catches in. You know, it wasn't enough to fatigue them for their next set, but they were getting some skill work in. And then, you know, at the collegiate level, when you're not allowed to use a football, a little trick is, I know it's fatter, so it's not 100% the same, but you can use a rugby ball or an Australian rules football, which is smaller. So now you have one that's bigger and one that's smaller. You're technically not using a football, and your guys can get some catches in. This idea can be used across all your positions and all your skill sets, and it's really a great way to maximize your time.
Oh, I love that idea. Yeah, it's just trying to improvise. Everybody should be improvising and innovating. So, like, this is just a starting point. Hey, look, you know, take it and implement this as you will to benefit you the most. But think about it. You know, let's keep this evolution moving. It's not just done by a few people. It should be done by collectively all of our coaches out there. But I want to say this. This is another key coaching point. I think when you're talking about slowing guys down and stopping them, it's an investment of time. You really need to do, as coaches, do it. Take the time, like, it's maybe tedious and stuff, monotonous, but it's really important, because once you get them to understand it, that's the goal. Once I can teach you, it's like teach a man to fish type thing. So once you get them to understand how to do it, well, then, you know, you hope that they can kind of self-police that. And then the guys that want to be great will do it. But you got to get to that point where they can start to coach themselves and make that an emphasis. Hey, look, you're accountable for you. If you're not playing well, then, well, you know, hey, don't blame me, the coach, because I've given you all the tools, all the information. Now you need to self-correct, and that's what life's about, is trying to learn how to, you know, move past some failures. And failures aren't really failures. They're actually, it's a learning lesson. They're opportunities. So when we get these kids, take the time. It's worth it in the end. It's worth the investment of time to stop them, slow them down. And there's always a chance to turn up the dial, you know, and get them in conditioning. But don't compromise, you know, the mechanics for a conditioning session.
Guys, I think it's a great discussion we had here today on the different ways we can integrate and think about the skills we want to incorporate. I really like the idea and want to emphasize again what's been said over and over through the course of this, that, as Andy mentioned, this is not the grind part of it. The accuracy is so important, and this is an opportunity. There's not a game at the end of the week. There's not a test at the end of the week. Don't put that part of it under the gun. It's important that we develop that in a progression, and that the athletes really start to learn those movements and become proficient at them before they start to scale it up. And then what you're going to find is this is going to build over the course of time. And you won't believe what you've accomplished over the course of an off season when you hit August, and where these guys are going to be at. It's going to be distinctly different in how you're going into that in-season portion of the year with the skills that you've developed incrementally outside of a direct football environment through your strength and conditioning program. Before we go here, we had our shoot in Arizona a couple months ago, And I know we were really excited about the content that we're going to be putting into the system here in around February of 2019. Scott's going to be previewing this both at the AFCA and at our national convention, as well as potentially out at a few Glazier locations throughout the country. But Scott, give us a preview of what we're adding to the system in 2019.
Yeah, we're getting more detail. So you're going to see things like down blocks. How do I block a guy on a base block on inside runs, inside the tackles, like inside zone, that one-on-one situation, a one-on-one down block. And then conversely on defense, how do I defeat the down block? How do I defeat the base block? Second level blocks, things like that, defeating second level blocks. How do I, you know, for linebackers, for offensive linemen, it's really this year's content is position specific. So we're getting into like the minutiae for each position, taking them through coaching points, step-by-step, how to do things that are, you know, commonly seen on the field. In addition to that, we're doing shoulder contact. We call it the buckle. Most of the stuff we do is, again, we talked about tip of the spear is the hands. It's also the shoulders. It's the point of contact, the first point of contact we want to use to engage opponents. And as I said, that's not the helmet. So we're teaching the buckle, and that's how to generate force and deliver a ton of power with the greatest degree of control with the shoulders in pre-tackle contact situations. So it's not tackling. It's going to be like taking on a lead block as a linebacker or a secondary player, or pulling, like guards, pulling around to hit second level defenders. We want to do that with our shoulders because in some cases the collisions are just too fast. We don't want to use the hands, but we will definitely want to use the shoulders. So we take you through that as well. There's content. So I'm excited about that launch and all the new things that we're going to be giving people. We're real excited about it.
Yeah. And I know a part that as Andy and I sat back behind the scenes and watched this stuff get captured on camera, we were really excited about the troubleshooting aspects that you put into this. So not only are you going into the basics of some of these blocks, but you're talking about common, I guess, ways that people are trying to defeat them and vice versa on the other side of the ball, common counter moves to things that you'll see there. So just a lot of detail going into this, and I know we're going to continue to build on that within this system. So great. Right now, it's a great opportunity to get things that are going to help you right now. You don't have to wait until next season to start working the development of skills, especially for players who are involved in contact on a regular basis. So, Andy, appreciate being here as always. Scott, thanks for joining us and giving us some detail and ideas on how to incorporate skill development into our off-season program.
Thanks for having me, guys. Thanks for being on with us, Scott.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.